Raise your hand if you think you're intolerant of gluten. Good. Now raise your hand if you know you are intolerant of gluten. The difference between what we think and what we know leads us to ask, to be or not to be gluten-free.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 931st edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Aaron Shore on the boards. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Aaron.
Yes, Michael.
Are you intolerant of gluten?
Sometimes, yes, as a matter of fact.
Do you know for a fact that you're intolerant of gluten?
You know, to tell you the honest truth, I have so many health issues, I never know one foot from the left.
Okay, I'll take that as a no, I don't know for sure. Also, a big thanks to producer Kelly Bayer for helping us produce this show. Folks, in case you haven't noticed, but I'm certain you have noticed, a whole new industry of gluten-free has sprung up to service along our food chain. So industrious is this gluten-free business that our good friends in the federal government have stepped in to say what we may say and what we may not say about gluten-free. From our raising of hands, it is evidence there is a lot of difference between what we know about gluten and what we really do not know about gluten. Gluten is, in the most simple of terms, protein that glues sugars together in the grains of wheat and related grasses, like barley and rye. When we domesticated those grasses 10,000 years ago, they became our staff of life, which is to say they were the food of our being. As the grain freed us from having to hunt and gather and allowed us to settle down and develop civilization, the gluten really became, in a very real sense, the glue that holds our communities and our societies together. It is our staff of life. Many of us have, quite suddenly it seems, become intolerant of gluten, and an entire industry has blossomed to feed us gluten-free. But given the difference between what we think we know about gluten and what we really do not know about gluten, perhaps it is time to ask some questions, like, what is gluten and what role does it play in our traditional diet? What is gluten intolerance, and how do we know if we are intolerant and have celiac disease or something like that? And should we all be gluten-free? Well, here to help us find some answers, we have Diane Javali, who is a registered dietitian at the University of Washington Medical Center up in Seattle. Diane, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Registered dietitian. What is a registered dietitian?
A registered dietitian means that we have at least a four-year degree, Bachelor of Science in Nutritional Sciences, followed by an internship, typically a year. Some people do 2 years. Typically a year where we work in a medical setting, learning all about treatment and prevention of disease. And then followed by that, we're able to take an accreditation exam. More recently, they also have programs where people get Masters of Science along with that credentials. But folks like myself that did this a little bit ago, a master's wasn't required, but we certainly did the full internship and all the training.
Good enough. And you work at the University of Washington Medical Center up there in Seattle?
Correct.
And I guess you're on staff there, so they're the ones who pay your salary, right?
That's right.
I always ask who pays the way, so the listening audience knows where we're coming from. So where you're coming from is the University of Washington Medical Center. I have a very interesting question with respect to dietitians, but I would like to to set that question up by asking a couple more questions. First, what role does diet play in human health?
That's an excellent question, because I think we don't really know the vast array of everything that diet does in the human body, but it's critical. It really is. You know, when you talk about bread being the staff of life, I think of nutrition as being the staff of life, because without food and without the nutrients that we get from our food, we just can't support life. And so it's critical. And I think, unfortunately, in recent years, we have taken the term diet and moved it away from something that means the good food that we eat and turned it into a word that means weight loss.
And there you go. That's let me ask you another question then. What happens when we are deficient in essential nutrients, when our diet does not include everything that our bodies need? What happens to our body then?
It can be anything from fatigue to mental changes, muscle loss. People that have vitamin deficiencies, for example, B12, can get what we call neuropathies, where they brain doesn't function correctly, or they get numbness, tingling in limbs. So there's a whole host of things that can happen when people don't get the variety of nutrients that they need.
And how do we know if we are getting everything we need?
Well, generally, if people are working with their doctor and having their annual checkups, which I think a lot of Americans don't necessarily do that probably as routinely as we should, but they will be asking a full battery of questions about, you know, your health, how you feel. They'll probably do a quick question answer about what are you eating, and then they should also be testing some blood work. The one thing that doctors typically don't do routinely is they don't check for vitamin levels. They'll check vitamin D, possibly, but they often don't check a battery of vitamins unless there seems to be an indication to do that. If somebody's having, you know, signs of anemia or mental difficulty or things like that, then I would certainly ask your doctor to check for vitamin and mineral deficiencies.
Good enough. Now for my question, and I bet you've never had this question before. Why are dietitians so demure? And the reason I ask, pretty good, right? The reason I ask is that this is my 931st radio show on food, and you're the first dietitian, registered dietitian, I've had on the radio. And so I'm wondering why. Is that so? Because diet is so incredibly important to human health. Why are dietitians always in office number 373B or something, and why aren't they in the lobby?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. I am so glad to hear you say that, because I think that's something that dietitians have struggled with over the years. Number one, people really don't understand what a dietitian is. And so I think that's the first problem. And usually if somebody, and I see this at the university too, if somebody wants to find out about a particular topic, the media always wants to talk to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And doctors are wonderful and they have great advice, but sometimes the doctors just don't know as much about nutrition as the dietitians do. And so I think the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics has been working really hard to try to get dietitians out there in the forefront so that we can really show people that we are the experts in the field of nutrition.
Well, it just seems to me like when we humans go searching for human health, we always think, well, I have to go to the doctor. But it seems to me like perhaps a doctor should be the last place we should go for human health, and that we should start really looking toward our diet for the place to start with human health, and the doctors should be the last place we should go.
Well, I somewhat agree with you. I do think the doctor should probably always be the first place people go, because they're the ones, you know, in our medical system, whether we like it or not, they're the ones that really drive patient care. They're the ones that can prescribe medications if needed. They're the ones that diagnose and treat. Excuse me. They're the ones that can order lab values, all of those things. And so I feel like it's absolutely critical to work with your doctor and have a good relationship with your doctor. But then hopefully then the doctor will realize when that they need to pass the patient on to the next person that's an expert in some other piece of their care, like nutrition.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break, Diane, but when we come back, we've got some big questions. What is gluten and what role does it play in the human diet? What is gluten intolerance and what exactly does it become, what it look like in our bodies? And finally, should we all be gluten-free? You folks out there invited to participate, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back, gluten-free. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
What about it out there? Do you think that you are intolerant of gluten? Do you know whether you're intolerant of gluten? Well, holy smokes, in the last few years, the whole industry serving us up gluten-free has exploded into a $100 million a year piece of business. Federal government jumped in with labeling restrictions as to what may and what may not be labeled gluten-free. And all of this really did happen in a very short period of time. And so we're going to track back and see how we all became so intolerant of gluten. And first of all, I'm going to start with what exactly is gluten, and who better to ask than Diane Javelli, who is a registered dietitian at the University of Washington Medical Center. Diane, what exactly is gluten?
So gluten is a protein that's found in wheat, rye, and barley specifically. And so gluten is the thing that gives structure to baked goods. It's what helps bread keep its shape.
It's literally glue.
It really, yeah, you can think of it exactly like glue. And the problem comes when people are predisposed to gluten. It can trigger an immune response, which can result in inflammation in the intestinal tract, mm-hmm. and actually cause changes in the absorptive surface. The little fingers are called villi. It can change the absorptive capacity of the intestine, and then people can get all kinds of symptoms related to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I came up with the notion that this gluten, you know, as our staff of life for 10,000 years, gluten really is kind of like the glue that holds our communities and our societies together, because it allows us, you know, wheat and the domestication of grains has allowed us to settle down and quit chasing wild animals about to eat them. So, you know, we grow these grains and turn them into bread and beer, and that becomes a great source of our protein. And it's been our source of protein for, principal source of protein for, gosh, you know, thousands and thousands of years. Where did all of the gluten intolerance come from that just kind of popped up fairly recently? It seems like it just popped up recently. Or am I imagining that?
Well, Well, you're definitely not imagining that. I think the gluten-free industry, all the products available on the market has been much more recent, but gluten intolerance has been around for years and years and years, and it does seem that the incidence is on the rise, but there's really only about 1% of the U.S. population, and in Europe as well, about 1% that have a condition called celiac disease.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they do think that there's a larger percentage, about 6-8% of the population, that may have gluten sensitivity. So what, you know, the experts are trying to find out is, why is that happening? And I think some of it is that we have better diagnostic capability. There's a better understanding of gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. We used to think it was a very, very rare condition, and we're finding that that's just not the case. And then it goes also back to what you were just saying about breeding of wheat. They, over the years, have done selective breeding in wheat that has increased the gluten content. So that may be one reason
for this. A factor as well.
And the other thing is, yeah, we just consume a lot more wheat than we used to. We kind of overconsume a lot of things, actually, in this country, but we're certainly seeing wheat and gluten in many, many products.
Well, another thing that may have a bearing on the incidence, I read a piece by Dr. Hugh Sampson, who has been doing double-blind studies of food sensitivities for the National Institutes of Health. And he says that whereas 20% of people think they have an allergy to gluten, only 4% actually have it. So do you think that sometimes in our minds we just kind of like get carried away with what we think we have instead of what we know we have?
Absolutely. I see many more people that think they have gluten sensitivity and issues with wheat and other grains than actually do. But that is, you know, not to downplay the severity of, you know, for people that actually do have it. But yeah, right now it's very much a fad, and everybody's kind of trying gluten-free just to see what will happen.
Right. And you mentioned a story of a gal who came into your office complaining of various ailments, and one of her friends said it's probably gluten intolerance, but it wasn't, was it?
No, and this was a really sad case of a woman that had been having neurological difficulties of various types and starting to have difficulty walking and things, and so... which is one of the things that can happen with people that actually have gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. So her friend said, oh, just, you know, you should go on gluten. Gluten must be the problem. And so she tried a gluten-free diet and waited for some months and then, went to see her doctor and worked it up further. And unfortunately, this particular person had ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease. And so the point of that, meaning that she tried to self-diagnose, well-meaning friend, thinking, okay, this must be what it is, let's try this, and she delayed treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that often with folks self-diagnosing, and I think that's really the most important thing, is that people should not self-diagnose. If they feel like that they have a sensitivity to gluten, they need to get to their doctor and they need to be tested, because the symptoms of gluten sensitive can mimic many different things.
Various things.
GI diseases, yes.
So really I guess the message here is to be pretty careful, because we don't really know what's going on, and we need to know what's going on before we take any actions.
Exactly. I think it just makes sense. If you are not feeling well, if there's anything going around in your body, you should seek medical attention for that. And if they think that you may have gluten sensitivity or celiac disease, they'll actually do blood work to test for antibody levels of that get elevated when people are consuming gluten. And the problem with self-diagnosing and saying, oh, I must have gluten sensitivity, I'm just going to stop eating gluten, if people go off of gluten for a period of time and then they go to their doctor and say, you know, things still just aren't right, I'm wondering if I have a problem, when they go to check the blood antibodies, those levels may come back negative because the person has been off gluten. So it's really important to not just self-diagnose and stop gluten. You really need to seek medical attention, get tested, and then if they really can't find the presence of celiac disease or wheat allergy, then they may have you try a gluten-free diet to see if symptoms go away.
Mm-hmm. One very wise person that I like to listen to suggested that many people have, unfavorable reactions to different kinds of foods, and the best way to really figure things out or where you're at is to have a diary of what you eat and write down exactly what you eat, when you eat it, and then measure the reaction on down the line. And by keeping a diary, you can get a pretty good sense, at least, of what you've been eating and how your body reacts to it. What do you think about something like that?
Absolutely. That's something that dietitians typically always have their patients keep, a food journal. And where I work with patients with digestive diseases, I also have them in that journal write down symptoms, too, associated with certain times of the day or certain things that they eat, so we can see if there's a pattern. And then the only real way to know if a food is bothering you is to take it out of your diet and then try adding it back. But again, in the case of gluten, you don't want to do that for an extended period of time because it may mean that you don't get an adequate diagnosis. And it's very important to have a diagnosis because celiac disease is a genetic thing. So you would want to know if that's something you're going to pass on to your children.
Good enough. And that's what we're going to look at when we come back from the break. We're also going to go to the phones. If you'd like to join us today with your questions about gluten intolerance, celiac disease, all of the above, we have the expert here, Diane Javelli, a dietitian with the University of Washington Medical Center. Phone number is 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, and you are about to tune in to some very important messages. And when we get back, celiac disease. Hey out there, do you think you have an intolerance to gluten? Well, do you know if you have an intolerance to gluten? There seems to be a great disparity in those two positions, and that's what we're trying to work out today. Do we really have it? Do we think we have it? What is all of the current attention, I guess, on gluten intolerance? And it's not just an intolerance, but it can actually result in a disease, as I understand it, a disease called celiac disease. Diane Javelli, what is celiac disease?
So celiac disease is a chronic small intestinal immune response, basically. So when the body is exposed to gluten, it can produce antibodies which actually attack the lining of our intestinal tract. And that can cause all kinds of problems, from gas, bloating, abdominal pain, diarrhea, to actual malabsorption of nutrients, and therefore cause nutrient deficiencies, anemia, neurological problems, a whole host of things.
So when you have celiac disease, how does it become manifest in your body's health? What happens?
Well, sometimes people don't have symptoms at all, and they actually find it on a routine exam. If they go to their doctor for an endoscopy, they sometimes find it on routine exam. But classical presentation of celiac disease is diarrhea, malabsorption, sometimes weight loss. In children, it tends to be failure to thrive. But there are people that have no gastrointestinal symptoms at all, and they just present with chronic anemia. So I always tell my patients when they say, "Oh, I've had anemia for years," I say, "Well, why?"
Uh-huh.
"Well, I don't know. I've always had it." It's like, well, it's not normal to just have it. And there's a zillion different reasons that people can have anemia, but it's important to understand.
So people
why.
Could go through their entire life with celiac disease and probably not even know it.
Exactly. In some people, there's very few symptoms, and other people have, all the range of symptoms that I just described.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know that we understand the reason why some people are so much more symptomatic, or if it just takes longer, the reasons for that.
It just does. Now, what about the difference between celiac disease and irritable bowel syndrome?
So irritable bowel syndrome really is kind of a diagnosis of kind of a collection of symptoms. It's usually diagnosed when they can't find any other functional or physical thing wrong, but people that have irritable bowel syndrome tend to have a lot of the same symptoms, so gas, bloating, diarrhea, sometimes constipation. And what they're finding with irritable bowel syndrome is there may be a link with gluten, but they think that the bigger link really is with the types of carbohydrates or sugars that we
Wow. So it's not a protein intolerance, it could be a sugar intolerance. Which is just
right, and it's not sugar cane, which is interesting.
Right.
There's different classifications of sugars, and there's a diet now called FODMAPS, F-O-D-M-A-P-S, which probably could be a whole show in its own, but FODMAPS is basically an acronym for the different types of sugars in our foods. And so when we break them down into categories, there's fructose and different types of fruit, there's lactose in milk, there's galactans in beans, and there's fructans, which is different than fructose, fructans, which are found in wheat and some other vegetables.
Ah.
And so I think the really interesting thing about this, a lot of times when people say, well, I was having, you know, just kind of gas problems and other things, and I started avoiding gluten and I feel so much better. I think what may be happening for some folks is that they're not having those particular types of sugars from the wheat when they leave the wheat out, and so they're having less symptoms, and they're assuming it's the gluten. But again, gluten is a protein.
Right.
So I think it's really important for people to understand the difference, because being intolerant of certain types of sugars do not damage the intestinal tract. It can make you feel really, really awful, but it's not damaging. And so what we find with people with irritable bowel syndrome, sometimes they respond to maybe not having as much wheat in their diet, or having as much as certain types of fruit,
okay,
or lactose in milk.
So lots of things to be aware of here then.
Yeah, so again, that's why it's really important to have a really good dialogue with your doctor, and then maybe take a food and symptom record to them, and then request to also see a dietitian. Because then the first thing I would do if somebody came to me with gas and bloating is I would say, well, let's look at some of these foods and sugars that ferment in our colon when we digest them and cause gas. Let's look at cutting back on some of those and see if your symptoms go away. Because if we do, then we know it's a benign thing, and if you eat, you know, beans once in a while, you know you're going to get gas, and that's fine. It's not damaging you.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you really are diagnosed with
celiac
disease, for example, eating gluten can damage you. So it's very important people understand what it is they have.
Very good. Now we're going to go to the phones, and if you folks out there would like to participate, ask some questions. Diane Giavelli, who is a registered dietitian at the University of Washington Medical Center. The subject, gluten intolerance. Are we intolerant of gluten, or is gluten intolerant of us? Well, let's go to Georgia. Georgia, welcome to the food chain.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for this show today, because this gluten is the hot topic. It seems it's everywhere now, and people are talking about it. I wanted to share with you, 25 years ago, I was diagnosed by a naturopathic as having a gluten intolerance. She didn't do blood tests. She went strictly on symptoms. And so for the last 25 years, I believed that I was gluten intolerant. Well, last year, I decided to do a blood test. And guess what? I'm not gluten intolerant. In fact, feta cheese, yogurt, and I'm Greek, so I've been raised on those two feeds, is what I'm allergic to, and things like brewer's yeast, which I thought was good for everybody. So I really think your guest is right. Get yourself tested, because you really don't know what you're allergic to just going on symptoms.
Yeah, there's so many symptoms for so many different things. It's really hard to keep track of what's what. Georgia.
Now, my question to Diane is this. I laid off all those foods, Diane. Is it possible, which is what I'm doing, and I hope you will concur it's the correct thing to do, that if you lay off those foods long enough, you can clear them from your system and then rotate them in like once a week, and your body will handle them okay. Is that correct or not?
Well, with lactose, they do think that usually people can build back a tolerance to small amounts of lactose.
Uh-huh.
And so, again, it may depend on the amount and the frequency, because, again, it's not something that's harmful to the intestinal tract, but it just can make you feel really bad. So if you find you can tolerate little bits of those food and not have any symptoms, then it should be fine.
Going to take a quick break. Georgia, thank you for that call.
Thanks,
really
Michael.
Appreciate
Thanks.
It. And we're going to, when we come back, we're going to pick up other calls, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Nelson with Diane Tavalli. Right back. Well, in a double-blind study, Dr. Hugh Sampson, working with the National Institutes of Health, found that 20% of us think that we have a allergy to food. But when tested with a blood test, only 4% of us have an allergy to food. So there is a disparity between what we think and what we really know. And so that's what we're working on today with respect to gluten. And we have Diane Javelli, who is a registered dietitian, University of Washington Medical Center, to help us out. And we're going to go to the back to the phones, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Annalise, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Program.
Thank you. Thank you, Diane, for bringing up a really germane health issue right now. And thank you, Georgia, for bringing out your problem of diagnosis and had a rather interesting encounter with not having been pre-diagnosed about gluten. I, too, have had an interest in this. I read a book by a cardiologist, William Davis, his book, Lose the Weight, Lose the Weight. I wasn't interested so much in losing weight because that's not an issue for me, but in what he said about, I was interested in the subject because gluten has become such a hot topic, and he said that things like diabetes, arthritis, high cholesterol, celiac disease, stroke, heart attack, asthma, and allergies, irritable bowel syndrome, brain fog, vision, chronic fatigue, sleep problems, acid reflux. He named out a lot more problems just about what
he
everybody
forgot hiccups.
Is talking. Yes, I mean just about everything that everybody has problems with of late. And I was interested in his point of view and why he felt that gluten became a problem, because as you probably know, it dates back to pre-biblical days.
Yeah, 10,000 years.
Really, when bread was the staff of life.
Yeah.
We have a store named that way, and it features a man standing with a staff of wheat. And he said it was because in the 1930s, in order to make wheat more productive, they changed the structure of wheat, and they changed the actual wheat grain. And so the wheat that we now eat is not the wheat that is unadulterated. It's highly adulterated. And over time, people became more and more surrounded by this in all kinds of products that use gluten.
Now, let's have Diane follow up on that.
That, I thought, was a really germane issue, and I'd like to hear her point of view.
Thank you very
I'm really
much,
interested
Annalise.
Also because dietitians used to tell me, for instance, that I knew in the university, oh, don't even worry about vitamin C. We don't need it. Now, this was years ago, and vitamin E, which I know is very important, both for just good health in your food or supplementation if you don't get it in your food. So I really respect what you're saying, Diane, and I appreciate hearing Michael, that you brought her on the program to discuss this very hot topic.
Thank you very much for the call, Annalise. Diane, what do you think about I think you actually brought this whole notion up that we have rejiggering the genes of wheat to make them higher protein content wheat, correct?
Correct. And so that's one of the theories, that it may be that selective breeding to add more gluten that's causing a problem. And I think the other thing, though, you know, in my job, day after day after day of my work life, I talk to people about what they eat all day, every day. And people just consume a lot of wheat products in general, and I really do not believe wheat products are bad unless you have reason to need to avoid them, a wheat allergy or gluten sensitivity, celiac disease, etc. But people do eat too much of them, and in this country, we tend to eat a lot of wheat products in the form of refined things. So white pasta, white bread, white crackers, white tortillas, you know, where the fiber has actually been refined out of that.
All the good stuff has been taken out.
Exactly. And so I really would love for people to actually just add more whole grains into their diet and actually, if, you know, assuming they can tolerate them, eat whole grains, not just eat all these refined things. And potatoes have taken a bad rap over the years for the same reason, but we tend to, at this point, consume lots of potatoes, and we consume them in fried form, chips and fries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really don't believe that there's any one bad food. I think people need to eat a variety of foods, and we need to eat them in as close to their whole form as we can, because that's when they're going to have fiber and nutritional value to them. And, you know, enjoy things that we know we don't need a lot of, like sugar and fat. Enjoy those in moderation. But we really can consume everything.
So what you're telling us, Diane, is to stay out of the convenience store.
Well, I think that's what... Actually, I don't want to be sued by any convenience store, so I'd say I think be selective at how often you shop at the convenience stores and what you buy. But there's a place for everything. I admit taking my children to the convenience store yesterday and allowing them a treat, but it's not something that we do daily.
Right. Dondi, welcome to the food chain.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I appreciate this topic. It is a hot topic right now. I'm a certified nutritionist, holistic, board certified, and also master certified in eating right for your blood type. And a couple points I'd like to bring up. As far as
you know, what can you hold them? Because we're gonna have to take a quick break, Dondi, and I don't want you to cut you off right in the middle of it. Okay.
Okay.
Can you hold them?
Yeah.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. They were talking with Diane Javelli, who is a registered dietitian, University of Washington Medical Center. We're talking about gluten intolerance or our intolerance of gluten. You're invited to participate. We do have a few minutes left, and we'll get you in if we possibly can. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, so much to talk about and so little time in which to talk about it. So let's go quickly right away to Dondi. Dondi, you're up. You want to finish?
Yes. About the testing, some people can take the lab test and they're told they don't have an issue with wheat and or gluten, and they actually do, and it's because not all of the antibodies are tested. So I want to get that point out so people understand that the testing isn't the end all. Also, there's a difference between having an allergy, a celiac, and having an intolerance to gluten. An intolerance means the person doesn't have the enzymes to properly digest the gluten protein. And the way people can know if they've inherited the gene to be able to produce that enzyme is if they're a blood type O, they really cannot digest gluten. Oh. If they're A's, they will have trouble digesting whole wheat, but they can digest unbleached white flour products. And so I just wanted to bring this out so you guys would make the distinction.
Thank you very much. Diane?
Well, I think it's important to understand that the experts in the field of celiac and gluten sensitivity, and Donnie's right in that people can have gluten sensitivity and not show signs of celiac disease,
right,
or have possibly mild levels of antibody, but not to the level where they would diagnose celiac disease. But the experts in this field really say there's no good way to diagnose gluten sensitivity. And with the blood type diet, that is a diet that's been around for a long time, but medical experts and the American Medical Association really don't endorse that.
Okay.
So
a little bit of diversity. Let's go quickly to Rachel. Rachel, welcome to the food chain.
Hi. My question, is there a connection between a low thyroid and gluten sensitivity or celiac?
Diane?
Yeah, people with certain types of autoimmune disorders are at higher risk of developing celiac disease, and thyroid disease is one of those. People with thyroid disease are at a higher risk, have a higher incidence. People with diabetes actually have a higher incidence of developing celiac disease as well.
There you go. Diane, a couple minutes left. Should we all be gluten-free?
No, absolutely not. And the reason for that is because if you don't have signs that eating gluten causes problems and you have not been diagnosed with celiac disease, we just don't think that a gluten-free diet is automatically a healthy diet. Gluten-free grains tend to be low in fiber, I shouldn't say gluten-free grains, but gluten-free products that are substituting wheat products tend to be very refined and at this point are not really being enriched with nutrients, and they tend to be higher in sugar and fat. So if you are going to take wheat or gluten out of your diet, or you need to be on a gluten-free diet, it's really important to eat a variety of healthy foods to make sure that you get all of the nutrients you need. But
and that from Diane Javelli, dietitian, University of Washington Medical Center. Thank you all for tuning in. Food Chain Radio program. See you next week for more What's Eating Radio. And remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you, Diane.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.